All right. Hello, everyone. Podcast number two. This is Gary D'Amato, sports columnist, the Journal Sentinel. I'm here with Matt Velasquez, beat writer for the Milwaukee Bucks. Bucks off to a really good start. One loss, three wins. And a lot of stuff to touch on today, Matt. But I thought we'd start maybe by talking about something nobody's talking about. Nobody's talking about this guy, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about him. I don't even know who that is. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, huge topic, considering his monstrous start to the season. That's for sure.
You know, I guess the question is, he's just played so unbelievably good so far. It's very early in the season. I know Jason Kidd's already talking about his minutes, trying to keep his minutes down because it's a long season, but he's played a lot of minutes already, and it doesn't look like he's going to be sitting the bench a lot in upcoming games. So, you know, the question, I guess, first of all, is physically. He's a young guy. He's in fantastic shape, but he's going to take a pounding here. And can he continue to play at this pace with this energy and this many minutes a game? And we're talking a long season. How long can he continue to do this? Can he do this all season? Or is he going to have to pick some spots to catch some rest and maybe even take one or two games off throughout the season? What do you think?
You know, I think that at this point, there's no reason to believe that he couldn't keep this up. I mean, Jason Kidd's been asked this before. Can he keep up this pace? And he's like, yeah. I mean, that's what he can do it. Yeah, obviously, they don't want him to play a league-leading number of minutes. I think part of that comes down to the fact that their first four games of the season have been against tough opponents, and they haven't really had the opportunity to leave him out for long stretches in order to win those games. But as their schedule lightens up a little bit, you know, look for him to get some rest. You know, when they're playing teams that they should beat, you know, the kind of teams like the Hawks, who they're playing this weekend. You know, that's a team that, you know, isn't expected to do too much and has struggled early in the season, and maybe they can get him some rest there. Maybe they can get him some rest, you know, in the couple times they play Phoenix. That team is kind of out of sorts. I know we'll talk about them more later when it comes to Eric Bledsoe and all the rumors going on there. You know, so when the Bucks have opportunities, they're going to try and get him some rest, and, you know, that's one of the things that Kidd's trying to do in getting Giannis out of the game early. You know, I got a lot of questions on Twitter during the game the other night when Kidd took him out in the first 4 minutes after he had scored seven quick points, and people are like, what are they doing? Don't they know how good he is? And yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, but they need him later, and they're going to stagger him, and they're going to keep Middleton in there, and then they'll give Middleton a breather, and they'll get Giannis back in there, and then they'll kind of make sure that one of those two playmakers is on the court, especially since they were missing Malcolm Brogdon that night. You know, and then by the end of the game, Giannis was still fresh. He was still able to do what he needed to do, and, you know, it all worked out exactly how they needed it to. You know, still not exactly what Kidd wants in terms of the number of minutes. They're still too high. But right now, you know, it's hard to complain too much about, you know, what Giannis is doing when he's on the court, because when he's on the court, he's fully locked in and, you know, just playing at as the coaches would say, a really high level.
You know, I'm looking through the media guide right now. I'm trying to figure out how many guys have averaged 30 points in Bucks history for a season. And obviously Kareem did a couple times, but I don't think anyone's averaged 30 for a very, very long time. It's a high threshold of points to score 30 points night in and night out. He's done it obviously in the early going here four times. Can he average 30 points this season, do you think?
I think it's possible. I think that, you know, one of the things with Giannis, when you're talking about, you know, such a high ceiling player, I mean, it's hard to discount almost anything happening. I mean, I can see why you would think that maybe he couldn't keep this up. You know, it's hard. Teams are going to adjust to him. You know, all these different things are going to pack the defense in, and maybe he'll go through a poor stretch shooting or something like that. But, you know, just the things that he does, teams know what's coming. They know that he's going to try and attack the paint. They know that they need to, you know, cut down his driving lanes. They know that, you know, he isn't going to shoot from the three-point line very often, if at all, and they still have trouble stopping it. You know, and so if he can continually get to the basket, regardless of what teams are doing, regardless of how much they know about him and what he likes to do, then those are going to be high percentage shots all the time. and you know he should be able to cash in on those. He gets fouled a pretty decent amount and has gotten better on his free throws, at least you know with the small sample size of the start of the season, has been shooting them at a good clip. And if he can continue to generate trips to the line, you know, shots from in close, he's just gonna get points. Like, he's gonna score. He's gonna get his 20 plus a game, if not 30 plus a game. And teams are kind of gonna start have to, you know, saying, okay, he's gonna get that, but let's just stop everybody else from doing things, and we'll be okay. You know, his game isn't really a high variance game in terms of scoring. He's not like a shooter who goes on streaks in terms of, like, you know, okay, you know, guys like Mirza Teletovic or Tony Snell or Chris Middleton, they can get cold from 3-point range, but you know, it's less likely that Giannis gets cold from inside 10 feet, just because, you know, when he's inside 10 feet, he's basically already at the hoop.
Yeah, you know, just as a point of information, Ram, I found the part in the media guide on scoring averages, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar averaged 34 times in a 5-year span. The last time, 30 on the nose in 74-75. But interestingly, Matt, only two Bucks have even averaged 25 points a game since then. Marcus Johnson did it in 78-79, and Michael Redd did it a couple times, most recently 10 years ago, averaging 26.7 in 2006-07. So that'd be 11 years ago. So that shows how hard it is to average 25 points a game, and I certainly see Giannis averaging 25. 30, it's not a huge leap from 25, but to do that consistently every night, that's asking a lot of a guy. But as you said, he's definitely going to score a share of points.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just going to happen. I'm surprised to hear that, you know, a guy like, you know, I know Ricky Pierce used to fill it up, and, you know, Alvin Robertson, you know, he was more of a triple-double kind of do-it-all guy. I guess he never even averaged 20 in a season in his career. You know, but just nobody being at or above 25 over the course of, you know, the past 30, 40 years. Just two guys. That's pretty crazy.
I know. Ricky Pierce averaged 23 in 89-90. And, you know, a lot of guys have averaged 22, 23 over the last 25, 30 years. But very few guys have averaged 25. So that's if Giannis can do it, another feather in his cap. Let's talk about the supporting cast. They wrote a column after they lost to Cleveland. Really, their only game they haven't played, you know, really good was the Cleveland game, saying that, you know, they needed – Giannis is going to need help, and he didn't have much help in that game. And since then, Middleton and Chris Middleton and Mirza shot the ball pretty good. So what do you think about the guys around him? Are there one or two or three guys who are going to be able to play at a high enough level so that Giannis doesn't have to carry that gigantic load night in and night out?
Yeah, and you know what you wrote in your column is something that, you know, Jason Kidd has often said already, you know, that they need to support him. They need to help him out. He can't do, you know, exactly what he's doing. He can't have the high usage rate and the, you know, basically, if he doesn't create it, no one does type of situation that they've had, you know, at certain points early this season. You know, he needs support, he needs help, he needs guys to make shots and make plays, you know, whether he's on the court or off. And that's something that's going to be, you know, possibly an issue throughout the season. Early on, I think Malcolm Brogdon stepped up, you know, to kind of fill that number two role and just being really consistent. Being able to create off the dribble, to find teammates, to kind of just knock down shots. He's made 7 of his first 14 three-pointers, and, you know, you can definitely work with that. So he's done a good job. You know, no sophomore slump for him in the early going after his Rookie of the Year campaign. Chris Middleton got off to a really slow start. You know, was shooting like 33% from the field as a whole through like the first three games. I think he was 9 of 27 from the field. Got out to another cold start again on Monday, and just really couldn't buy a bucket. And then in the second half, he really got going. It seemed like they went to him a lot, or maybe he just started creating more on his own right out of the break, right out of halftime, and put in a couple quick points, made a bunch of shots, and then had the big three-pointer at the end of the game to seal the deal. So that's what they're going to need from him. Neither Kidd nor Giannis were were or have been worried about Middleton, his scoring or his production. They know exactly, you know, who he is and what he can be. They know that a 40% three-point shooter, you know, isn't going to be sitting at like 12.5% from the three-point line like he is right now. That's just not going to happen. Giannis even said that, you know, Chris can go out and hit seven, you know, tomorrow. Like, it could just happen. And that's the kind of, you know, shooter and scorer he is. So, you know, they expect that he's going to be able to fill that kind of secondary role best among the guys that they have. And I think one guy who kind of gets overlooked, too, is Tony Snell. He's, you know, he's shot well from three-point range. I think he's at 46% or so, just a hair behind Mirza Teletovic, who, thanks to 5 threes on 9 attempts the other night, is up to 47.4, I believe. But Tony Snell's gotten off to a good start shooting. He's very reliable in terms of scoring inside. He's actually made an effort over the past over the summer, over the off season, to improve as a more dynamic player. You know, last year he was incredible on catch and shoot threes and was the best shooter on the team according to effective field goal percentage. But he really wanted to be able to put it on the floor more and provide more options for the team. So now you can see him using that pump fake, driving into the lane, slashing into the paint when he sees that there's an opportunity, not just hanging out along the outside. He's a good running mate in terms of going in transition, because he can keep up. He can be there ready for a handoff or a dunk. And he plays great defense, and that's one thing that they've always asked him to do. So, you know, if he can get productivity from behind the three-point line and keep teams honest and that they're not just kind of hanging out near the three-point line, he can get some back cuts in there or a couple easy drives, then that can make the offense even more dynamic.
You know, I thought you raised a really interesting point about when you said that the Bucks, Jason, and everyone knows what they have in Chris Middleton as a shooter, 40% three-point shooter. I think, you know, fans kind of – players are going to go through slumps and people are going to panic a little bit, but inside the locker room they don't panic. You've got a track record. Just like if you're a 290 career hitter in baseball and you've got 8 years in the major leagues, if you're hitting 235 in May, you're gonna get back up to 290 at some point if that's your track record. I think the same with shooting. You know, you're a 40% shooter. If you get off to a slow start and go 5 for your first 23, well, at some point, you know, you're gonna get back to your norm, and I think that's gonna happen with these guys. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and Middleton said he feels fine. You know, he feels like his shots are coming off good. They feel good. They just aren't going down, and that happens, whether it's right now or, you know, 30 games into the season, 60 games into the season. It happens to different guys at different times. And so, you know, the alarm has not been raised anywhere in or near the locker room, and they're just looking forward to Middleton, you know, eventually, you know, evening out and getting to where he's supposed to be, because that's going to involve hitting a bunch of threes without missing.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Malcolm Brogdon. He's had a little issue with an ankle. You were at practice today. Can you talk about Malcolm and how he's doing? Do you see him playing tomorrow night, first of all?
I think it's likely he'll play tomorrow night, though it's not 100% sure. The injury, you know, I asked Jason Kidd when he thought it happened or he saw it happen. He said he wasn't sure. He just knew it was a left ankle. It happened during the Portland game. And when you look back at the tape, it looks like it happened on the deciding steal, that poke steal that Giannis had, knocking the ball away from CJ McCollum. Brogdon was the one who came up with the ball, and then he turned and pushed it ahead to Giannis for the dunk. And so while all of us were watching Giannis, Brogdon was trailing the play, running right behind. So it was Giannis, three Portland defenders, and then Brogdon was right behind. And he was definitely, you know, hopping on his right foot, keeping his left leg off the ground, wincing a little bit. You know, seemed like he'd hurt that left leg, you know, in some capacity. Then he came out and he played the last play. He helped double team Damian Lillard, leading to a pass to Nurkic. And as we all know, that ends up in the block from Giannis to, you know, kind of put things away. But then, obviously, once you see that left ankle injury the next day, then you say, okay, well, if you put two and two together, it seems to make sense that the injury would have happened on that play. He did some shooting on Tuesday, though wasn't able to practice. And then today on Wednesday, he was a full participant in the team's practice over at UW Milwaukee Panther Arena, also known as the Mecca, also known as the Milwaukee Arena. And so he was a full participant there. I saw him. He was participating in a drill at the end of practice, kind of just, you know, dribbling with a coach standing in the middle of the lane as, you know, kind of faux defense, and kind of having to cut around the coach and then take a shot, take a layup, do whatever. So he looked fine being able to do that. He was getting around fine, wasn't favoring his leg in any way. So kid after practice said that, yeah, he practiced and he seemed fine, and they'll just kind of make sure that he actually got through it fine. Reevaluate him tomorrow, see how he's doing, see if he's comfortable, and if so, then he'll be back and able to play.
You tweeted that it was cold in the arena today at practice. What was up with that? And were the players complaining, or were you just cold standing there watching?
I think it was Steve Ashburner from NBA.com. You know, he's covered plenty of games in that arena over his time, and he said that in the past it would get really cold often during practices because of the loading dock door being open. And I think that's what happened. They had, you know, things coming in. And they were getting the arena ready for the game and all that. So I think that it was the loading dock. It's cold out there today. So, you know, but with that wind blowing and the door being open, it was definitely cold. I know that that Giannis ended up putting on a jacket, you know, towards the latter end of practice. You know, a couple guys had hoodies on and long pants and all that stuff. And they were all, you know, definitely talking about how cold it was. You know, Jason Terry was shooting some threes. He was like, man, if it wasn't so cold.
Well, we know one thing. It's going to be a lot warmer tomorrow night when they play the Boston Celtics. Let's talk about that game a little bit. First of all, I think it's the only opponent they could play in a return to the Mecca game, because in the 80s, people who were around back then and watched the Bucks and watched games at the UWM Panther Arena, formerly known as Mecca, and before that the Arena. But back then in the 80s, it was Mecca. And Boston had such good teams with Larry Bird and McHale and Parrish and Dennis Johnson, and those guys would come in. And the Bucks always had good teams under Don Nelson in the 80s, and they could just never get past Boston in the Eastern Conference semifinals or the finals a couple times. And the one year Boston wasn't there, the 76ers were. So I think it's neat that they're playing the Celtics. How much are you looking forward to covering this game, Matt? Because you never got a chance to probably see a game, an NBA game in that arena, correct?
No, I did not. And actually, today was my first time even being, like, actually in that arena. I was there, you know, a few weeks ago whenever they announced the classic jerseys they'd be wearing, and they announced the Celtics as the opponent. I was in, like, the atrium there, but, you know, going into, you know, the lobby doesn't count as being there, you know. So that was my first chance to kind of be, you know, on the floor and seeing what it was like. And it's going to be intimate. It's going to be fun. You know, I spent a couple of years covering Marquette and covering college games. So, you know, I've been to some college arenas that are small and intimate, and those are always a good atmosphere. And this should be a pretty similar, you know, fun, tight, intimate atmosphere tomorrow night. And, you know, it's a great idea. I mean, if you have your old arena just kind of hanging out and still in use, next door to your current arena, which is next door to your new arena. If you have it there, it's your 50th anniversary, and you can, you know, convince the NBA to let you do it and have it on national TV. I think it's a great idea and great fun, and I'm sure a lot of fans appreciate it and will enjoy the opportunity to either be there live or watch the game on TV.
Yeah, I got a chance to watch a lot of games in that arena, having grown up in Milwaukee. And I think the first time I ever was in that arena, for a basketball game anyway, was the Harlem Globetrotters have this tradition of playing on December 31st on New Year's Eve in Milwaukee. They've done it for years and years and years. And my dad took me when I was probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old. So that would have been the early 60s. That's the first time I saw basketball in that place. And, of course, over the years, I saw a lot of Bucks games and a lot of Marquette games. And I wrote about some of those in my column today, some of the things I saw in there. So just some great memories in that place. And I'm really looking forward to getting in there tomorrow and experiencing that arena again. So it's going to be a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, and for anybody who hasn't read Gary's column, definitely go on JS Online and check that out. Also, our colleague Ben Steele collected 10 memorable games, Bucks games from the Mecca, So definitely take a look at that list, especially if you were among the people who either could have been there or watched them on TV or remember those games. I'm sure it'll be a nice trip down memory lane.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. I'm looking. Do you know where the media seating is? Because back in the day, Matt, now, of course, they seat us in the Bradley Center. At least we're halfway up the bowl on those tables they put out. But back in the day, we sat courtside. Do you know where we're gonna stick us tomorrow night? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think there's a chance, I'm crossing my fingers, that because it's a national TV game that I might have a chance to sit courtside where the local TV usually sits, since the game's not on Fox Sports Wisconsin. So cross my fingers. Hopefully that can happen. And then there's going to be some media seating kind of in one of the corners, in the, kind of the first couple rows of seats, I think. And then the rest will fit upstairs. Right at center court, where the kind of like TV video, where the booth is.
Okay.
So actually, the view from up there might actually be really good, considering it's right at midcourt and it's pretty similar to where we'd sit at the Bradley Center, distance-wise from the court. But at least you'd be right at center court and be able to see things, and you'd be kind of surrounded by fans to a certain extent, and that might be kind of a fun atmosphere.
I'm a little confused about one thing. I know they're bringing back the Robert Indiana, the sort of pop art court that was really famous back in its day as being somewhat avant-garde. The Boston Celtics had the parquet, you know, floor in their arena, but you didn't see, you know, really fancy painted courts until the Bucks did that back in the day. But I'm confused. Are they actually bringing that court back? I know it's in storage somewhere, I think, in the Milwaukee area, or have they just sort of repurposed and repainted a different court? Do you know what they're doing with the court?
Yeah, they repurposed and repainted a different court. I asked Peter Fagan when I was up in Madison if they, you know, I said the old court, it's not playable, right? He's like, oh no, it's not playable, you know. And so they're actually, from what I heard, as far as I know, this court was repurposed and repainted. They have the rights for the one game, and then they're going to sand it down, and it's become the Wisconsin Herd's like backup court.
Okay.
Or something like that, or secondary court. Not that it would be different. That's kind of what I had heard. I don't know exactly how that plays, if it's like a backup court in case the first court has something wrong with it and they need to, you know, quickly put it out there. But it would not be the Robert Indiana style court. That's just for this game only. And you know, when I was at practice today, the team, it was their first time being in the arena with the court, and they were all talking about how bright the court is, you know, because
yeah,
you can't see any hardwood. I mean, it's just paint. It's almost like being at a playground, you know.
The whole
court is painted, and you know, the negative space that makes like the M, that's yellow. That's not like at the Bradley Center, that's, you know, that's wood. You know, or it's at least like the wood color. It's like a brown. But at, you know, at the arena, it's yellow. And so you have yellows and golds and reds, and they kind of just pop off the court. And it's a little different for them. They're something they're not used to, for sure.
It was one instance when Milwaukee was definitely ahead of its time with the color court. It's pretty cool. I'm glad we're going to see what that looks like tomorrow. So, I know you've gotten some questions from Twitter that fans have would like answered, and you probably have done a list. And so, if you want to maybe tackle some of those now, we can talk about some of the things that are on fans' minds right now.
Yeah, sure. I opened it up for questions. I got a whole bunch. Thank you to all of you who sent us questions. You know, we'll continue to solicit your questions and for future editions of the podcast, and you know, we'll see how many we can answer on a week-to-week basis, and we'll try to answer them as best we can. So let's start off with good buddy Scott Wegner. He asked if we'll be dressed like reporters from the OG Mecca days.
I'd have to find my bell-bottoms and my white belt. Nothing's going to fit me from those days that I have, if I had it still. So
yeah.
I think I'll be wearing normal 2017 clothes. How about you?
Yeah, I think I had grand plans of trying to acquire some 70s or 80s themed, you know, clothes, you know, maybe a suit from Goodwill or something like that. But, you know, I sometimes have a hard time finding time in the day to do basic like things that I need to do. let alone, like, you know, things that are fun. So, you know, that kind of fell by the wayside. Unless somebody shows up tomorrow with some kind of, like, you know, bell bottoms and stuff that are, like, in my size, like, it's, I'm just gonna rock a suit and just live with it. I do have a tie that is pretty old. I think it came from Goodwill, and it's a red tie, and it has a bunch of, like, old-timey looking basketball players on it. So I'll try and wear that. I think that's kind of fun.
Well, I've thrown my leisure suits away. You know, it'd be funny. I'm going to look through my closet. Maybe I have an old Marlin tie, like the kind that Nelly wore, made famous, the fish ties, you know? You weren't around back then, but he wore these outrageous ties, and it'd be nice if I could dig one of those up. Maybe I could find one of those at Goodwill. But anyway, what's your next question?
Yeah, I've got one from Robbie Lund. Basically, will the Bucks be honoring any old players tomorrow night? You know, it'd be nice if they brought Nelly back. Yeah, that's what he had to say. I don't know of any planned like honors or announcements or, you know, on-court festivities with old players, though I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Obviously, Johnny Mack will be there. Mm-hmm. He won't be calling the game, but he'll be there, and I'm sure he'll be mentioned or shown on the video board at some point. It'd be kind of surprising if he wasn't. But I wouldn't be surprised, too, if other guys who used to play for the Bucks were in the house, and you know, if they're there, it seems like a missed opportunity to give them some recognition.
Yeah, no, I agree. I got a very nice email from Eddie Doucette, who read my column. Eddie was voice of the Bucks back when they first came to Milwaukee, and just had a fantastic radio voice, and just invented a lot of terms, really, that are used today. A lot of the nicknames, and you know, he's the one who coined the Skyhook for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and got a nice email from Eddie. Boy, I wish he was back at the game, not even just to call it, but just to see him. That would be great, but I don't think he's going to be there. So I'm hoping some players who have played through the years in Milwaukee are there. But right now, as we know, Matt, we only know for sure that Johnny Mack's going to be there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's all that they've announced, though. I wouldn't put it past the Bucks to kind of keep things under wraps and try to make it kind of even more fun and make it an even livelier and celebratory event than it already is. So I guess we'll go to the next question from a Twitter user, Wisco Scout. They ask, when Jabari returns, do you see him as our future sixth man? And would the Bucks leave their starting lineup intact at that point? I think that's something that's entirely likely. Or totally possible. You look at the Bucks starting lineup and the way that they're able to really, I mean, that's their best lineup at both ends of the court. They're long, they're able to score, they're able to defend, they can switch everything, they can just, you know, do a lot of things, and they work really well together. They could also, you know, you can also surround Giannis with four guys who are liable to shoot a three and, you know, can make it at a pretty good clip. So that seems like the best way to approach it, you know. But then, you know, when Parker comes back, you could slot him on a second unit, and that second unit could be, you know, a really, you know, strong offensive force, you know, with him and Monroe especially. Just the way that those guys are already, you know, great scorers and playmakers in their own rights, with Jabari being able to, you know, basically just take the ball and attack the rim, score from the mid-range, shoot the occasional three, use his athleticism, which, you know, you would hope if you're the Bucks that same level of athleticism would return to him following his rehab, and all signs indicate that, you know, he's on track to being at that level, if not better. You know, so he can bring that and just be instant offense off the bench, and then Monroe has already proven over the course of his career that, you know, while he may not be the kind of player that the NBA favors right now, as a low post scorer, he's fairly rare in the NBA, and he does what he does very well. So, you know, you take that second unit, you get a lot of offense, and then you can mix and match pieces from, you know, from the starting squad to the bench guys, and you can kind of create some interesting lineups where, you know, it's possible that Jabari would be closing the game. Maybe you take Thon Maker out and play Giannis at center, and you just have a really dangerous offensive set of five guys out there. So I think it's possible, but we'll know more as the date gets closer to his return in February.
Yeah, plus the other part of the equation is Jabari's coming off, obviously, a second ACL. And even when he's 100% and ready to go hard and to do everything he always did and to be back to his normal old self, they're not going to throw him in the starting lineup and ask him to play 25 minutes. I mean, they're going to have to ease him back. I see him playing, you know, 10, 12, 13 minutes the first, you know, 8, 10 games he's back and gradually upping his minutes after that. So I don't see him. I mean, I would be very, very surprised if he was in the starting lineup right away. He might work his way back into it at some point, but I'm with you, Matt. I see him definitely coming off the bench and not playing big minutes early either.
All right. So we have a question from Jaden Johnson. What pieces do we need to be able to beat the Cavs or Warriors powerhouses?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a good question for 28 teams in the league. I think obviously having Giannis and having a superstar caliber player, or, you know, if we're being conservative, we can call him a budding superstar, but I think a lot of people would go already just call him a superstar at this point. But so having that level of player it's a great start. Surrounding him with shooters is obviously something that you're going to need to do. I think just another piece would just be another scorer, another playmaker, preferably someone who can shoot from anywhere on the court. I think the more guys you can have in that mold that are versatile, switchable, you know, can cover multiple positions, that's what you need against, you know, the best teams in the league, because you're going to have to make up for whatever matchup deficiencies you might have. By being able to just kind of throw everybody out there and be able to hang with them no matter who's on the court. Because if you have a liability out there, if you have someone that they can put in the pick and roll and just exploit on defense, you're going to be in trouble. So you need to make sure you have as many people as possible to fit as many positions as possible. And then, you know, when it comes to the Clevelands and Golden States of the world, at some point you just got to outscore them. And so to have guys who can put the ball up from anywhere on the court, is always a help. So that might be a cop out, but it's, you know, that is definitely something that the Bucks or any team could really use.
No, I agree with you. And if I'm not mistaken, they beat both those teams last year. So can they beat those teams? Yeah, they can. They have to, as you said, they have to play really, really sound, good fundamental basketball. They have to shoot it well and do all those things well. Get contributions from multiple guys and not depend on Giannis to, you know, go off for 35 and 16. A lot of guys are going to have to chip in, but if you're talking about beating those teams in a series, that's a different story. I don't know if they're quite at that talent level yet, but certainly on any given night, they can beat those teams for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be excited to find out if the Bucks could beat either of those teams in a playoff series. You know, 'cause that, at least in the case of Cleveland, that probably means at least making it to the second round. And in the case of Golden State, that means, you know, even better things. So,
yes,
you know, so we'll see how that goes. Then we have from, I believe it's from Kai Sweens. How have expectations shifted from the beginning of the season? Are expectations and hype about Giannis almost too high? Well, I'd say that I think the expectations inside the Bucks locker room and around the Bucks have been high. They've expected what they've seen from Giannis because they see it every day in practice. Where, you know, Jason Kidd joked the other day, you know, I asked him if Giannis's 44-point game and huge defensive plays down the stretch, if that was the most complete game he'd ever seen him play. And he's like, official game? because they see that kind of stuff, you know, all the time at practice, and they know how good he is. So in terms of those expectations, I think they're in line with what they had. You know, outside expectations, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of storylines in the NBA this season that preoccupied a lot of the headlines. You know, obviously you have the Chris Paul trade to Houston, and you have the big three in Oklahoma City, and you have, you know, the big trade between the Cavs and the Celtics, and so a lot of the conversation hovers around the top, and then you have, you know, a couple different teams that get some attention, like the 76ers for, you know, having Embiid and Simmons and Fultz, and what can they do with those young guys and all that. And then there's always, you know, the Lonzo Ball discussion and, you know, and what's going on with him and his dad and everything in L.A. So the Bucks, you know, weren't a huge talking point, but there were some people who were talking about Giannis as a potential MVP candidate even at that point. I think with Giannis, if you're going to label him as a player with no ceiling, I don't think you can necessarily put a ceiling on the expectations. That's just kind of, they go hand in hand. So I don't know if they're too high, but I think that, you know, people are starting to realize or starting to see the potential of what the Bucks can be and what Giannis can be, and you know, it's up to them to decide if they can handle those expectations and prove that they're worthy of those expectations.
Yeah, and they'll be on a national stage, obviously tomorrow night, playing a nationally televised game. And if they win that one, they'll have beaten Boston twice, plus Portland and Charlotte. So I would expect, not necessarily expectations to be ramped up, but I would think that people would, nationally would start talking about the Bucks a little bit more even, especially if Giannis goes off again on national TV tomorrow.
Oh yeah, and, you know, the chances of that are, you know, pretty decent. Considering that he's the, you know, the straw that stirs the drink for the Bucks. So, all right, let's go to, we had a lot of questions about Eric Bledsoe. For those of you who don't know, which it would surprise me if there's anyone, on Sunday, Eric Bledsoe tweeted that he tweeted, "I don't want to be here." He claims he was referring to the fact that he was at a hair salon and he didn't want to be there. And the Phoenix Suns GM said he did not believe that, and Bledsoe has since been sent away from the team, and it's very obvious that the Suns want to trade him. Many teams have expressed interest in Bledsoe over the course of the past few days, and the Bucks have been one of them. And so the question has become, well, what level of interest, who would it take, you know, all kinds of rumors. There was a rumor that the Bucks had offered Greg Monroe, Thon Maker, and a first-round pick, which ended up being nothing. It was the kind of rumor that I saw it, and I kind of just shrugged it off, because if the Bucks had offered that, it would have been taken. That seems like a pretty...
offer, for sure.
Yeah, and so, I think my thought process on it, and I've talked to a couple people recently, the market is not, or should not be, incredibly high for Bledsoe right now, in the sense that the Suns have made it clear that this is the end of the road. They're going to trade him. You know, and when that situation comes about, you don't have to offer your best to get him. And that even if there's other teams competing, why would any of them offer their best to get, you know, a guy who is a promising player? He's dealt with some injuries. You know, he's owed $29 million over the course of this season and next season, so $14.5 million a year, basically. And early in his career, he showed promise that he could be just a standout two-way player, a great scorer, a tough defender, and really, you know, at a 6'1 point guard, he could be someone that you could see working well next to Giannis, outside of the fact that he's not, you know, a great three-point shooter, but he is a playmaker and a scorer, and, you know, he could be a useful asset to the Bucks. I think that you're not going to mortgage your future to get somebody who you can control for the next 2 years and try to add him to the team that you have. So I don't think it's reasonable to put someone like Malcolm Brogdon or Thon Maker on the table right now. It doesn't make sense to me for one of those guys to be involved in a trade. Obviously, you need to match salaries. So, you know, a trade of a young player plus, you know, theoretically a John Henson or a Mirza Slotovic, somebody who has a high enough salary to kind of swap, because the Bucks are so up against the salary cap, even though they do have trade exceptions that they could use, it would still, you know, you'd still have to add something else in there, and possibly even add a sweetener of a possible first round pick, which, you know, again, is mortgaging your future for somebody who I don't know if he pushes the Bucks, you know, that much further this year or next, especially considering, you know, we just talked about the Clevelands and the Golden States of the world. You know, they're, you know, LeBron James isn't going anywhere. You know, the Warriors aren't going anywhere. So in that 2 year window, I don't know if he moves the needle so much that the Bucks, that he would make, you know, a big enough difference for the Bucks to give up on younger talent or potential picks for him, you know. And so, you know, maybe you can, maybe a protected pick, since it, you know, it might, it'll probably be late in the first round if you protected it, you know, top 15 protected or something like that, you know, depending on what you're giving up, then maybe you can do it. But I think this is a possible trade where if you can give up as little as possible, if you can give up, you know, I've talked to people before, if you can give up Rashad Vaughn and John Henson, you know, and, you know, not that Henson is, you know, playing a small role. Right now he's playing a pretty big role and doing well for the Bucks. But if you think you can, you know, find a player like Bledsoe who you believe could be more effective than Henson and add more to your team, and that helps the salaries match. And right now Rashad Vaughn hasn't played in the past two games and, you know, hasn't really shown that he can do much to build this team up and make them stronger. If you can do something like that, then I can see the, you know, how you make that trade work. I saw someone else ask, you know, of a potential trade involving, I guess it was posted on CBSSports.com, you know, the Bucks would give up Jabari Parker, Dellavedova, and possibly a pick for Eric Bledsoe. And, you know, I don't know how that works for either side. I think that Jabari is, I don't know if they want to give up on him that early, even though they're facing a tough decision of having to pay him next summer if they want to keep him. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously that deal with those two guys would help the salaries match, and I think Bledsoe could be a better player or a better scorer for sure than Dellavedova. I don't know. I'm not super sold on any of the proposed or rumored or possible trades that could get this done for the Bucks. But we'll see. I mean, it's still an ongoing topic. Bledsoe hasn't been traded yet, to my knowledge, and there are other teams who are interested too, and might be willing to pay more for him. So we'll see. I mean, right now the Bucks have a good thing going, and, you know, we'll see if they're willing to shake things up, or they need to shake things up in order to, you know, think that they can get a little bit better.
Yeah, you raise a key point there. They do have a good thing going. They're, you know, if they trade for Eric Bledsoe, he's going to start. What does that do to Malcolm Brogdon? What does that do to team chemistry? Does he fit with these guys? I mean, that's something that any time a general manager and a coach, in this case, Kidd and John Horst, would get together and talk about it, the first thing they talk about, they know his talent. They talk about, can the guy fit? Is he going to get fit in our locker room? What's it going to do to the guys in the locker room now and playing time and all that stuff? So there's a lot more to it than just saying, oh, this is a good player, let's go get him. You know, there's a lot more to it than that.
Right, and, you know, obviously he's at this point considered a malcontent in Phoenix, you know, and over the past couple of years they haven't been very good, and he's kind of, you know, sloughed off on defense. He used to be considered a really great defender, and over the past few years hasn't really demonstrated that he is interested in being a great defender. Not that he can't be, but, you know, a lot of defense is effort, and, you know, he's not making anybody's all-defensive team lists, or he hasn't been for sure. You know, so how do you take someone from that situation and incorporate them into your team, which, you know, from everything I can see, has great chemistry. You know, they all get along, and, you know, the locker room is a positive place, you know, in general, not just, you know, during wins, but even before the season, everyone gets along, and, you know, they're working well together. Plus, like, you know, if you wanted to replace him, you know, replace Dellavedova with Bledsoe, you know, you may get more scoring, but what do you lose in terms of, you know, Dellavedova has a lot of screens. He's willing to play in that pick and roll with Giannis and, you know, be the screener and kind of do different things. You know, how much do you value what he brings outside of scoring? You know, and that's something that, you know, I'm sure they talk about frequently.
Sure, absolutely.
So we'll close with one more, and then we'll be done. Cheesehead Sports Night sent me a bunch of questions, but we'll just go with this one. Can the Bucks become a free agent destination with what Giannis is doing? And I think the answer is definitely yes. You know, when you have a great player like Giannis, other players are going to want to come and play with that player. I mean, we've seen how, you know, Golden State and Cleveland, they have great players, and they can get really good players, or, you know, really good or good or whatever you want to call them, players to sign on at vet minimum salaries just so they could play on a winning team with a good culture that they know is going to go far. So we're not just talking about, like, top-tier free agents, which, you know, Giannis is the caliber of player who could that, you know, the Bucks could definitely, you know, market around in terms of free agency, but you can also bring in, you know, good to very good players who will take smaller contracts to get in on the action. The first thing is that the Bucks need to make sure they have some money to spend. Right now their money is really tight, and, you know, heading into next summer, they'll have to figure out what they're going to do with Greg Monroe, considering it's the last year of his contract. They have to figure out if they want to re-sign Jabari Parker and for how much. And there's, you know, the cap isn't going up as much as had been expected, so there's not a ton of flexibility. And I know that GM John Hortz talks a lot about having financial flexibility, and that's something that they want to achieve. And so we'll see how the Bucks get to that point if they're going to try and attract free agents.
Yeah, very good. Cheesehead Sportsnet is always good for a few good questions. That's for sure. Thanks. All right, Matt, I think we've gone to our allotted time limit here, and it's been fun doing podcast number 2. Looking forward to number 3, and looking forward to covering the game Thursday night with you. Can't wait to see the Mecca in all its glory again. It's been good doing, great talking to you again, Matt.
All right, yeah. Thanks, everybody, for following along with us for, you know, well over 45 minutes now at this point. So thanks for that. And as always, you can find our work at jsonline.com, and you can find our podcast there as well as on the JS Online or the JS app. There's a Bucks app, and we also have the podcast available basically anywhere you can get podcasts, Apple Music. Or Apple Podcasts, I guess is what it's called now, Google Play, and all those other places. So definitely check it out, subscribe, and we'll talk to you guys again down the road.